Hi, this is Jennifer Nanez from Albuquerque, and you are listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Enjoy!
Welcome in to another edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast, first line playoff edition. Adam Minnick, Lonnie Goldsmith back from parts unknown. Unless you follow him on the interwebs, then you know where the parts were. And Richard Cote, he's known. Many parts. I guess. Yeah. Brought to you by MyCustomSportsChair.com. PHN15 is the code. Get whatever sports chair logo you want. You can even get Richard's face if that's your favorite type of logo. MyCustomSportsChair.com. PHN15, the code. Welcome back to the country, Goldsmith.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
What time are you on? Have we figured this out yet?
Judging based on the 1 hour or 1 day per hour gone, I'm somewhere around probably 6:45, 7:45 right now.
PM?
Yeah, PM.
Okay, and we're recording definitely this in at the PM. 3:45 PM on Friday. So you're within 3 hours.
I'm within three, four hours. Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm about halfway back. Hopefully,
you're fine. Okay, you're done. Okay, we're done talking. Jeez, you're fine. 3 hours. Give me a break. 3 hours. Oh, gentlemen, we're in the thick of the playoff fun. And, not everybody's left as of this morning.
No.
And then there were 15.
And then there were 15. And, let's just start with Rick Bowness's post game for the Winnipeg Jets afterwards.
Eric, just overall thoughts on that one.
Overall thoughts? I'm so disappointed and disgusted right now. That's my thoughts.
Where does the disgust come from?
Pardon me?
Where does the disgust come from?
No pushback. But it's the same crap we saw in February. It was. That's why as soon as we were challenging for first place and teams were coming after us, we had no pushback. This series, we had no pushback. There are better players who are so much better than ours. It's not even close.
It feels like you've been holding these feelings on for a bit. Is it just out of tonight's game or finally wanted to release that?
It started back in January and February.
What is it about this team's leadership core or the top end players?
We got to push back. There's got to be a pushback. There's got to be pride. You got to be able to push back when things aren't going your way. We had no pushback. There are better players who are so much better than ours tonight. They deserve to win. They were the better team in the regular season. They were the better team in this series. Anything else? Good. Thanks.
That was some audio.
Yeah.
I don't think you liked this team's performance, gentlemen.
I mean, what's to like?
They won a game.
I mean, there was no pushback. He said it plain and simple. No pushback.
What's amazing is he harkened back to January, February, when they were battling for first place, and then they became a wild card team battling just to be the wild. I mean, he does not like this team and that roster that he has assembled in front of him. It's changes are going to be coming, I think, in the offseason in Winnipeg. That's what we learned last night.
Are the changes going to be, the players, or is it going to be Rick himself?
No, I think the players.
Okay.
Right? We've changed the coach. We've supposedly finally got a goalie, but they haven't changed all the parts yet. I mean, it's they haven't cleaned house. They haven't gotten pieces in.
No, they haven't. I mean,
and he just started.
He did just start.
First season.
It's his first season, but isn't the reason you bring in a coach with the experience of a bonus that he should be able to just jump in and work with whatever? It's not like they brought in some inexperienced guy. They didn't bring in a longtime assistant, an up and comer, anything like that. They brought in a guy who's been there, been around for a long time. And they had a lot of injury issues in this postseason. Yeah. Hellebuck wasn't very good, but it is a roster clean out what's needed? If you're a guy with that kind of experience as a coach?
My question is, he goes off not only on the team, but on the leadership of that club. How do you keep a guy around like that when he's got such disdain for the leadership of this club?
Well, I mean, the guy's he's sending a message, maybe to his GM as much as his locker room. I don't.
But then who changes? Like, it if it's something that needs, is it like a front office change rather as well as personnel change on the bench? What changes?
Maybe the, I mean, you've got, I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois is an RFA.
Mm-hmm.
That's their big money RFA. Nemestikov, Barone, Coleman, Johnson, Fijalbi, who, yeah, he was a waivers claim. Manolin, you know, Sam Gagne, Stenlin, all up front. Those are all, I mean, they've got a lot of chances. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys up front out of 16. Half their forwards aren't under contract next year. So you got a chance to change. You're stuck with your top four D-men. They're all there for the next couple of years. You're
top five.
Top five. You're stuck with your goalie for another year. So, I mean, you can change the forwards. You can change your depth. He was sending a message to Wheeler and Connor and Ehlers.
Scheifele,
yeah. I mean, I think Bonus stays. I don't think you get rid of him after 1 year, unless Kevin Sheveldayoff flat out admits he did something wrong. But if you're Kevin Sheveldayoff and you fire Bonus, if you're True North ownership there, aren't you looking at Sheveldayoff as a bye-bye?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, to me, it always comes back to the question, you know, we ask this a lot, not just in hockey, but really every sport. How many coaches does a GM get to hire? Right? How many bites at an apple do they get when it comes to putting a guy in charge? You know, this was, they took a big swing by bringing in a guy like Bonus because he's, like I said, he's a guy who's done it before, done it in Winnipeg before. but you know, there's not a ton of money left. If you know, it wasn't a huge contract. If you really want, I mean, there's only one, he's got 1 year at 2.5 left. He's got a $3 million option. That's all he's got left. So you could walk away from him now and, you know, sort of be okay if you yeah. choose.
I mean, I'm wondering if Sheveldayoff is the answer. So he's been with True North every step of the way. I mean, he came from Atlanta with them. So he's been the GM for 11 years. So is he the answer? Now, if he goes, then Bonus may go.
Yeah.
So I think either you retool the forward group because you've got a chance to change everything besides your top line, essentially, in the offseason. But I don't think, I mean, Bonus just finished his first of a 3-year. If Bonus goes, it's because they bring in a new GM and they let the new GM hire a coach. But I don't think Rick Bonus is necessarily the problem.
No, I don't either. I'm just wondering after that press conference if that's put more heat on him than he expected.
Is more heat on him though?
That's what, well, they've put any heat on him for that.
Yeah. I think it's a retooling of the front of the middle six there essentially, or it's Sheveldayoff. That's my prediction.
Okay. I mean, I don't think he's going, I don't think Bonus is going anywhere as well. Yeah. Just thinking outside the box there, but I do think that, you know, a coach of this caliber with a 3-year contract, yes, you give him 1 year with the pieces you have in place. You give him a second year of his own implementation of whatever tools he needs. And then year three, it's, you know, that's on you.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. So it's, but yeah. So we'll see what happens there, but I love press conferences like that. They're fun. Absolutely fun.
Maybe we'll have more after the games today.
Yeah. Yeah. So good times there. Good times there. I want to ask you guys now the biggest surprise as we sit here on Friday. So 4 games ahead of us tonight, Carolina, Boston, Dallas, and Seattle can all end their series tonight if you're listening to this on Friday. So, and then Toronto, New Jersey, and Edmonton can finish things up on Saturday night. biggest first round surprise, either positive or negative, Richard, so far?
Well, you know, I'm going to go the fact that Boston hasn't advanced yet.
Okay.
Just given the season, the regular season they had, the fact they're going to a game six, that's a little bit of a shocker to me.
Lonnie?
Seattle with an opportunity to close out a series tonight. Being up 3-2 against the defending champs, really, really impressive to me.
I was going to say that, but I'll do a third one just so we all have something different. Until last night, till Thursday night, the way Andre Vasilevskiy has looked in the playoffs has been my biggest surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's looked like a normal goalie, a normal playoff goalie.
He's human.
He is. I'm not shocked that Tampa is down in the series. I'm surprised of, and I'm not saying it's all Vasi. It's not all, but he's only stolen one of five games in the series. I figured by now he'd steal two games for him.
And you know, by the time this is done, he'll steal three.
Could be.
Does the fact that Toronto missed their first chance to close it out at, and they had it at home.
Yes.
How much does that weigh on them? Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They're squeezing their sticks tighter than Boston's squeezing their sticks. Cause there's pressure on Boston to not screw up the first round.
Yeah.
But they were a goalie fumble away from who knows how overtime ends up.
Yeah.
Right. Type thing, you know? So I don't think Boston's panicking, but if you're Toronto in that bubble of a hockey media world, and it's, I mean, you feel it. You can't not. And a lot of the pieces are the same as 3-1 pieces from last year.
Well, they've left themselves with no flexibility to make significant changes that needed to happen.
You know, yeah, Ryan O'Reilly, and that's, you know, that's the biggest change. But if we're talking 2 weeks from now back on this edition about Tampa still being in, everybody has been fired from Toronto by that time. I mean, if they lose in game seven, I mean, there's pink slips being handed out that night by Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment.
You got to believe they're pre-printed and ready to go if they go to a game seven.
I mean,
listen, the good news is if Toronto loses, they have all of their draft picks to read. Oh, no, wait, just kidding. They don't have a first. They don't have their own first, second.
They got a first.
Or third.
Yeah, they got the Boston's last first.
They're going to have potentially the last first. Yeah. They don't have their own first or their second or their third or their fourth or their seventh.
So they got three picks to read to them. But they got a lot of money coming off the books.
They do.
I mean, they've still got $33 million tied up front, but they got a lot of money coming off the books. Yeah. Okay. So there's two sides of this coin, right? There's the, they haven't won in forever. They're an original six franchise. Some people love seeing the old time franchises get back, long suffering franchises get back. You know, like we've seen, these guys haven't won since the 60s. Canada hasn't won as an organization, any organization since 93. There's that side of the coin. Are you rooting for that gentleman, or, oh, let's just history repeat itself, long suffering? Lonnie, I know where you're going being a Red Wings fan.
Listen, they're at a generation is considered what, 20 years, right? We are almost at a generation since having not seen them win a playoff series. And I am just fine with that.
You're biased.
I am incredibly biased. And the thing is, though, it's not just they're not winning playoff series. Like, it's hard to win against really good hockey teams four times out of seven, right? It's the way in which it's not happening. That's really the killer. If they blow a 3-1 last year to the same team that they blew a 3-1 to the year, you know, they blow it this year as they did it last year. Like, it's bad. It's the way it keeps happening.
Non-biased, you know, fully in the middle here, Richard, which side of the coin are you wishing for Toronto and their fans?
Well, as you know, I am a big fan of the Boston Bruins, who are an original six team. We also have another original six in New York still in the playoffs. So to have three original six move on into the second round, you know what? We're good with two moving on in the first round. I'm okay with Toronto maintaining tradition, because that's what this is really all about. The tradition of the Toronto exit. I think I'm pulling for Tampa to come through.
And our listening audience in Montreal is so happy right now. Like our Montreal listeners are just going to be ecstatic with this segment going on right here.
Except when I mention the Bruins, I'm sure they'll be ecstatic.
Yeah, but I mean, it's their hatred for the Leafs way outweighs it for the Bruins.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, we all have a common enemy in between the Habs and the Bruins. It's the Leafs.
Yep. So I can go either way. I mean, the misery is fun. But I do feel for them being a Hawks fan, because, you know, it was a battle between the Hawks and the Leafs of who was going to crack first. So Toronto's a great city. Tampa's won a few. I mean, I'm okay if they get off the schneid.
Yeah, I will say, as a, you know, taking a neutral approach to it, it's good for hockey to have Matthews and Nylander and Tavares, to have that group in the playoffs as long as possible. That's good for hockey.
Yes.
What's bad for Toronto is that Matthews is a free agent after next season.
But he's not going anywhere.
Why?
There is no way, as an organization, Toronto lets Austin Matthews go anywhere.
He's a UFA. He's going to get his money wherever he goes.
It's his choice.
It's not about the organization at all.
They're going to find a way to keep him. Come hell or high water, they're going to find a way to keep him.
If an arena in Tempe gets sorted out by this time next year, my friend, all bets are off.
Absolutely.
That's a big if.
If that happens,
you think he's going to be a desert dog?
If that happens, I could totally see it.
Okay.
I mean, talk about hero status. Literally could rescue a franchise and not be in the bubble of Toronto.
If they can't get out of the first round, let alone win a cup, forget that. They can't get out of the first round with the group they've surrounded him with. He's going to get his money anywhere. What does he have to do it in Toronto for?
And, you know, maybe he has loyalty to the team that took him. But
here's the X factor with Matthews that doesn't often happen with a letter wearer of Toronto. He's not Canadian.
Right.
Right.
And he's not Hockey City, Michigan, Massachusetts, or state Michigan, Massachusetts,
Minnesota,
right. American hockey.
Right.
I mean, why not LA? Who's out back on the upswing? A lot of endorsement money there for a good looking young guy, you know, New York. So I think if they don't win, the more they lose, the less likely I think Matthews resigns there. He will get more money elsewhere. He will.
And their top four guys are taking up about 48% of their cap.
They've got to figure it out. They do.
I'm not sure Toronto signing Matthews, well, you know, wholly unpopular for him to leave, I'm not sure it's the worst thing either for the health of that franchise going forward.
Well, but if we're going to fast forward to 2 years, if they're going to have to do what the Hawks and Vancouver have had to do with their stars, the Marner-Matthews contracts are going to have to be pretty identical, I think, for both of them to stay.
Yes.
You've got 1A and 1B there. And what that would be a sign is they're done with Tavares at, you know, 33, 34 years old, which I would get. I mean, Tavares isn't getting $11 million in his next go around at 34.
No.
So
Marner's got one year more than Matthews. What it means is that, probably Nylander is going to get moved in the offseason.
Well, I think that's going to happen anyway, regardless.
Yeah.
I think you have to move him to get, but yeah. So, okay. The reason I want Toronto to win and I want Boston, Toronto-Boston would be a juicy series. in the next round.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that'd be a lot of fun. But the others, you know, Vasilevskiy, we talked about it. I think that's just, you know, that let's go to the surprise in the West that, Lonnie, you mentioned, I think most of us had a gentleman sweep at best or at worst, you know, looking at it from the Avalanche fan. Going to go to the resident Avalanche expert, aficionado, fan, concerned citizen. How you doing in this series, Richard Côté?
As the casual hockey fan, I think this is great because I get to see more hockey being played involving this team.
You're not a casual hockey fan in this series. Shut the heck up.
let me get to the second part here. As a fan of the team, I am biting my nails. I am rubbing my lucky rabbit's foot. I am doing whatever I can because things are not looking great. They're not even looking good. They're not even really looking. This series has definitely gone pear-shaped on the Avalanche. A lot of fans around here thought that this would be, you know, gentleman sweep, maybe, you know, a 4-2 series. Colorado easily gets on to the second round. And now we're just hanging on for dear life and, you know, with, you know, whatever else we have going on off the ice. But yeah, it's, around here, morale is a little low, especially after game 5 there.
Yeah. Lonnie, you're, I mean, did you see any of this coming?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, one of the things, you know, we talked about it going into the playoffs. We talked about it all year with Seattle is can't stop the puck. And that it's Grubauer doing it in this series is unexpected to say the least. Against his old squad. It's really, it's been a really fascinating turn.
Well, and it makes you wonder, okay, Grubauer is probably playing inspired. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been good all except one game. Game 3 was the only game that got away from them and they only lost 6-4, but that's, you know, the only high scoring game that they've had. I think maybe, We need to apologize to Seattle a little bit. You know, they were only five less wins. They only had five less wins than Colorado in the regular season. Yeah, their wild card won, but I mean, five less wins is not a ton. And they scored 9 more goals in the regular season. So they have offense. This is not a team that couldn't score, shockingly, because they weren't built to score. As we said, you know, name the top 3 scorers. That was a fun game. Maybe the Seattle team is actually better than we thought. Not take, you know, or is Colorado, maybe they've had injuries. We know that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're more hurt than we've known they have been at the same time too, because their speed has been neutralized this series. And I didn't expect that to happen.
No. No, I mean, yeah, just watching what I can with Colorado and, you know, not having access to TBS and to Altitude Sports locally here. It's just they've looked extremely sluggish against Seattle. And yeah, like we've been talking all season with Seattle, I have no clue where this offense is coming from. And I didn't see it coming in. A lot of the sports writers here in the Denver area didn't see this coming either. I don't even think the writers in Seattle saw this coming. But you know, this has been an extremely close series, except for that one game, one goal games. If Seattle's able to keep it within one goal, they're showing that going to overtime or, you know, keeping close until the third period, that's when they really turn it on. So I don't think Colorado was expecting that coming into this series.
Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, it's definitely surprising, but at the same time, the more you look at it and kind of, if you step back and, you know, the 2020 hindsight, not as surprising as maybe, I think a lot of it was Colorado's reputation, Seattle being the, you know, the expansion team, their first experience. And maybe we didn't give him a fair shake when you really kind of look at everything, or did we just assume that when you can't stop pucks in the regular season, it means you can't stop in the playoffs?
I think a big chunk of it was also how Colorado finished the regular season. Yeah. They won 8 of their last 10 to, you know, push and get that final to win the division. I think one thing we didn't take into account is really how beat up and battered this team is. You know, they've missed their captain all season long due to an injury that happened, you know, seasons ago. And they've been trying to correct it ever since. They've had like Cogliano going in and out. They've had Cale Makar going in and out. He was serving a one game suspension last game. So that was a big hit to your defense and also your speed, because quite frankly, the guy is lightning on the ice. So I think game six coming up is going to be, is truly going to show what Colorado has to offer this postseason. If, obviously if they don't win, they're out, but just how they play, even if they do get a win, but they squeak by, it's not going to bode well for game seven.
A lot of this to me. So you get the emotion, Lonnie, of the Makar hit on Jared McCann, 40 goal scorer. He's out of the lineup. All the quotes are, hey, we played for him, all that. That was the big thing coming out of Wednesday's game. Not saying you don't always play for him. It's different. One game. You take 40 goals out of the lineup. I mean, that's a lot. Colorado knows about this. Landeskog has been injured for long. And, you know, they lost Makar for a game with the suspension. Can Seattle finish off this series, presumably without their 40 goal guy?
Yeah, I think they can. It's, you know, to go on the road and win, and you get a, you know, kid in, you know, Carty, who, you know, scores in his first career goal in his NHL debut in game five of the series that puts you up 3-2. I mean, storybook stuff. There's no reason they've been finding ways to win this whole series, and, you know, they haven't, you know, they've been close games. I mean, that to me is possibly the more bizarre piece of this, is that they're winning really close games. Nothing has been out of hand. They are winning, 3-1, 3-2, 3-2. I mean, these have been really close hockey games, and they don't need the 40 goal score. They're finding ways to win. I don't see any reason they can't do it again tonight.
Yeah. And, you know, Jaden Schwartz with 5 points in the first few games, you know, he's definitely come to do it. Like I said, I guess the thing that they've got going for him is nobody has scored more than 2 goals on this roster in the playoff games. Talk about a balanced attack. Yeah. So maybe McCann being out is, you know, Schwartz and Gicky have 2 goals each, and then a bunch of people have one on this team. Nobody is the stud right now. They are a team going through this playoff series. That's probably what's going to help them, I think. Schwartz in the front, Schultz in the back. I mean, those are your leaders in points, but then everybody else is right there. So are they deeper than we thought they were?
I think they've showed that all year, is that they don't have, I mean, yes, they've got the 140 goal score, but there is really incredible balance. They haven't, it's not like they haven't built around a couple, you know, big stars. They've really done this with like middle, it's like they built the entire roster out of like middle six guys.
You mean Vincent Dunn, Jordan Eberle, Yanni Gore, Daniel Sprong, Jaden Schwartz, Andrei Bukowski.
Right. They've
those types.
Yes. Yeah. they built the entire ship out of middle six forwards. It's
some of those guys are D-men too that I mentioned, but yeah.
Yes. But I mean, right. Nobody, they haven't built around Flash. I mean, the Flash is, you know, the Flash is a guy that didn't even make the roster this year, in Shane Wright, who, you know, is a first round pick. You assume he'll come good, but like Matty Beniers is probably the closest thing to Flash they have on the NHL roster right now.
For sure he is. For sure he is.
And like, they're doing it with just balance and steady play. Again, the weirdest thing to me is the goaltending, is you have Martin Jones as the guy who started more than half the games this year. 27-13 record, and it's Grubauer that's getting the playoff run.
That was by default because Grubauer couldn't get together early on and then got injured a bit. Let's not get, they brought Grubauer in to be the guy. Martin Jones is not the answer to the question.
He sure never has been. He never sure has been. If Martin Jones is the answer to the question, I think you have to take a really deep look at what the question is.
Yeah, you probably need to cut that question off and use a little Manscaped on it. Manscaped.com/prohockeynews. PHN20 is your code. If you need some trims, Manscaped.com/prohockeynews to get 20% off your favorite Manscaped product. Moving along to some other series, and you know, like I said, there's series aboot. The biggest complaining of the entire playoffs is coming out of Lonnie's backyard and his neighbors about officiating and all that. We'll talk about officiating bigger, but the Wild are doing what the Wild do, and Dallas is capitalizing. I'm sorry, I'm going to jump this. You guys can jump in afterwards. Minnesota's taken a lot of penalties all year. Minnesota has continued to take a lot of penalties. Dallas has a good power play. Dallas's power play has gotten really good in the postseason. That's why it's 3-2 Dallas. That's it. It's that simple. That's the series right now. I don't care how deep Minnesota is. They're deeper than they ever have been. They've showed it, but they can't stay out of the darn box. Rant over. Anything that, I mean, that's the series, right?
Yeah.
Stay out of the box, guys.
I mean, that's been the whole season. It's just they suddenly don't know how to they don't know how to kill penalties.
No. And they don't know nobody in the
postseason.
Either.
Nobody in the postseason does. Nobody in the postseason does, but
well, yeah. So the two least surprising things that I'm gonna go with right now. The Carolina Islanders series. No shock, that's just a dogfight and a lot of fun to watch. And Edmonton's power play is really good. Those two things haven't surprised me at all through five games of each of those series.
They're universal constants, like, you know, gravity in a vacuum. Or is that speed of light in a vacuum?
Yes.
Sure. Okay.
One of those. You're going to bring science into this group? That's the second line edition where you got to talk science?
Oh, okay. Fine. Jeez. I'll leave it there.
Yeah. You know, 57% Lonnie for Edmonton on the power play. It's good. That's really
just
good.
That's just silly. And I mean, as we talked about this, it's not like the Kings are taking an abnormal number of penalties. Nope. What is it, like 8-14? Is that what we decided? Right. Yeah. They're 8-14.
They have one of the lowest number of minors taken so far in the playoffs.
Well, when you have the most dangerous two skaters in hockey on your team
and historically best regular season, like they're one of the best power plays in the history of the regular season.
You just can't afford to take a penalty against them.
Yeah,
you could take one in a game and you could go and it could be one for one. Like, you just cannot do anything dumb against that team. They will absolutely punish you for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising. It's weird that I'm not surprised they're better than 50%, Richard. Just because, like, how compact the numbers would be with only, you know, you get 14, but I mean, they were a 30% playoff or 30% regular season team. So, I mean, this, you know, not a shock.
No, not a shock at all. And actually, what's really impressed me more so than their power play percentage is their penalty kill. They're hovering around 73%, 72%.
Not great.
It's not horrible. There's definitely a lot worse. Like, I don't know.
That's pretty horrible.
The team they're playing is doing a lot worse.
Yeah, but I mean, 70% is not good either. Their PK hasn't been good. This has not been a defensive special team show. If you like power play success, this is the series for you.
Okay. There are five teams that have a worse penalty kill than Edmonton right now. Tampa Bay, Florida, Minnesota, Vegas, and L.A.
Well, L.A., they're doing it to L.A.
So. Exactly. Okay. So there are four teams, really, that have a worse, you know, penalty kill than Edmonton right now. 72 is not...
You know what the common theme is? Only one of those is in the driver's seat. Well, I guess you're not... I guess they're on the sideline right now. Because they've already driven the car in Vegas.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, Minnesota, Florida, and Tampa are on the brink of elimination because of the PK.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Also, Minnesota, Florida, and Tampa are, you know, three of the seven most penalized teams in hockey the regular season, too.
Yeah.
The other four in the top seven are Ottawa, Arizona, Montreal, and Anaheim. The common thread there, of course, being...
They not in them.
Correct. And now, after Minnesota, Boston is right after Minnesota, but there's a significant drop-off. Minnesota had 925 minutes in penalties this season, and they allow more shots per game on average, barely, but they allow more shots per game on average than they take. And, you know, they're an 82% on the penalty kill for the season, over the regular season. It's look, yes. Did Minnesota got hard done by some penalty calls in this series, but over the course of the season, Dallas had 637 penalty minutes. You know, Minnesota's 300 more penalty minutes than the team they're playing against. Dallas stays out of the box. Minnesota does not. And that's proving to be the difference in the series right now. Yeah. Again, question some of the calls all you want. And I think there's some valid complaints. Some, not all of them, but some are valid. But this isn't just, I mean, this isn't new to Minnesota this season. This is just being amplified because it's the playoffs.
Yeah, and let's talk about officiating as a whole, because that's become, it's the playoffs, so we have to talk about it. I'm going to sit out the start of this because I have a big opinion on this. I'm interested to see what you guys think. Has the officiating been bad? Have you guys think it's been worse than in normal season? If so, what stands out to you? Lonnie, go ahead.
I'm not sure that it is. Penalty minutes on average are lower than they were last year.
In the playoffs. To this point, yep.
Correct. The thing that I think magnifies everything is that the power plays are so good. It's that mistakes by the officials, if you want to call them mistakes, maybe there are 50-50 calls that haven't been called in the past that are being called now. They're being punished by the power plays. If teams don't score on the power play, I'm not sure anybody's complaining. who are we kidding? I'm sure they're complaining. They're always complaining. But the complaints are muted, shall we say.
Richard?
From what I've been able to watch, I haven't noticed a whole lot of egregious either missed calls or made calls or mistaken penalties that are just outrageous. Like it's, yeah, there's been a little bit of ticky-tack stuff here and there, but I mean, every official's different. Every official sees the play differently. It's hard to make some of those calls in real time. The only one exception that I've really seen blown up on, all over the internet, was, I believe it was game one between Carolina and the Islanders, the Wes McCauley call of
Varzel embellishment.
That got me scratching my head. And listeners of the podcast, we like Wes McCauley here. He's very entertaining to watch. I don't think he did it to gain attention. He does that plenty on his own with, the regular calls he makes. But I was a little confused on the embellishment part of that on Barzal, but maybe he got sick of him looking around wanting to get a call. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But everything else has been so kind of status quo for me. And nothing else really jumps out at me. I will put one asterisk on the Stars and Wild series just because those are two physical teams and all bets are off with if something's going to get called there.
Yeah. I think the officiating's been pretty good. I think the biggest difference is for fans, especially longtime hockey fans. And it's funny, I thought about this and I read Greg Wyshynski's column off ESPN that talked about this. He made a very good point. The names are different of the referees. We have lost over the last handful of years, a lot of veteran referees that everybody knew names. Shiro, Brown, McCauley's still there. Walcom, McCreary, a lot of Frazier. Names that you just roll off. Magoo. that this roll off in the referee and the linesman community as longtime hockey fans, we've got a lot of new names that are in there. And I think that's part of you know, acceptance. But penalties are down. And I think that the whole big thing to me is goalies aren't as good. Part of it's the equipment changes as we've seen recently. And power plays are just that much better. It's power play percentage is way up. So why can't we look at it and say, it's not the referees, it's the players. Power plays have gotten better. And I think you said that, Lonnie, is it's magnified because of the power play success rate.
You know, and I think we're so used to playoff games being, you know, I don't think we've had a 1-0 yet, but like, you know, our generation of hockey fans, the three of us, we're used to seeing a, you know, 1-0 hockey games being commonplace. 1-0, 2-1, you know, 3-1 with an empty netter, right? They've been these close, hard-fought games. We're not used to the scoring in the playoffs that we've been seeing. Like, what was the first two games of the Toronto-Tampa series? Was a
7-3 followed by a 7-2?
Yeah. Like, or vice versa? Like, we're seeing abnormal goal scoring for playoff hockey. I mean, right, compared to what we're used to. I think, yes, the goaltending equipment changes Adam referenced, but also the skaters are just better and more athletic than they've ever been, and it's only continuing.
Well, I think also the biggest difference is, you know, we have a different generation of goal scorers. Even in the regular season, we have Connor McDavid with 150 plus points. We have Leon Draisaitl also with, you know, 120 plus points. We have at least 10 players with 100 right, points on the season. You have really good scoring players who are now in the postseason who are making it extremely difficult for even some of the elite goaltenders. So to me, that is probably the biggest reason, rather than the goalie pad changes, for, you know, why we're seeing these high scoring games in the playoffs.
Right. I think of the, you know, you're right, we had 11 players this year with 100 or more points. And that does not count Jack Hughes at 99 and Mitch Marner at 99.
Right.
So let's include them. Of those 13, all of them are in the playoffs except for Elias Pettersson at 102 points and Erik Karlsson at 101 points.
Yep.
Everybody else is in the playoffs. The players are just getting better.
Yeah. And that, to be honest, I'm really excited about, you know, where the future of the game's going, especially, you know, when we are going to be adding a player like Connor Bedard here, you know, in the upcoming season, seeing what he's going to be capable of, and just adding to this next generation of goal scorers that we're seeing in this league.
Yeah. The talent crop of skaters right now is why this is happening. And because they're better skaters, they're better at drawing penalties.
Yeah.
Because you're blowing past these defensemen, you get a stick out, they step on it. I mean, how many penalties have we seen in this playoffs where a guy gets a defenseman sort of, whether, you know, an honest poke check or a lazy poke check, puts a stick out, a skater is by him and steps on the blade. It's not an intentional trip. Like, it's an accident, but it's still a tripping penalty every time.
Still needs to be called.
And remember, you've got four guys in these playoffs that scored at least 20 goal power play goals in the regular season, and two more guys that scored 18 in the regular season on the power play. So the playoffs don't make your power play worse.
No,
because there's less chances, it magnifies. I think that's, but I'm tired of the reffing stuff. You know, if you want to complain about anything, let's talk about DOPS, the Department of Player Safety. Like, you reduced a major to a minor and then suspended the guy.
That's why they reduced it to a minor, so they could suspend him.
You could suspend a guy for a major. That's the whole thing I don't understand here. And this is what kind of like the refs are going to call more majors initially because of the new rules. If you call a major, you can take it to video review and change it, make it worse or make it less. You can't change a minor to a major for video review. It's the same thing that you're seeing in umpiring world with video review. They're telling you to umpire to video review. Call what you see. Like you know, it doesn't matter. If you miss it, you miss it. You know, we don't want you to miss it, but call what you see. But it's not magnified because you can go to video review and replace that safe out call, you know, on the bangers. But when you're given the tool of calling a major to get to video, and we've seen a number of them come back down, if I'm a referee and I'm not sure, I'm going to call a major initially.
Right.
So I can review it.
Yeah.
Right. And it's good that it's reviewable. It's an unfortunate loophole in the rule. It forces them to call something, whether they see it or not.
Yep. And they've got to figure out how to correct that. We've got to figure, because I think it was a good idea because it was meant to rescind majors if you make a mistake, but now it's being used as a crutch to completely review something that was bad. You know, I guess the only call that I would, a big time besides the Barzell, the big call, I think in terms of reversal would probably be the knee-to-knee hit. Mm-hmm. Facts involved, but nobody knew at the time that he was going to be ready to come back that same game. When you go knee to knee, and yes, the path didn't change. The video shows that it was still knee to knee. It was still an illegal knee. It wasn't probably a major, but when a guy's laying on the ice, not moving after a knee to knee, I mean, the guys are human. That's hard not to call a big one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, otherwise I thought the reffing was pretty good. I don't understand the people and their crabbiness with it, but I think we're always going to get it.
It's playoff sports. No matter what sport it is, everyone's going to be mad at the officials because their team took a penalty.
Yeah.
Whether it was deserved or not.
So we got an offense system to talk about up there in your land, Richard.
Yep. This actually some information that came out today as we're recording this on Friday, April 28th. Avalanche player Valeri Nichushkin, he has been out for a while, as we all know. After his last game he played was game two. Before game three, he was put on a maintenance day, according to head coach Jared Bednar. And then after the game, we were told he had left and was no longer with the team for personal reasons. And it was left at that. I'm one for, you know, respecting a player's privacy, but learning a little bit more now that, you know, what had transpired, it got me thinking, you know, what is an organization's responsibility for reporting information, especially when you have a big player, a star player who's, you know, in the public eye quite a bit, who's now hasn't been seen since. And you have a big fan base who's wondering what happened to him. There's some general concern. Is he safe? Has the team been in contact with him? Because it has been radio silence from the Avalanche. Well, we finally learned a little bit of what had happened. It was an incident at the Four Seasons Hotel there in Seattle ahead of game three, involving a woman who was severely intoxicated, who needed medical attention. And the team's doctors who were checking in on Nichushkin, who ended up finding the woman intoxicated at the hotel. It's a very odd situation. Not that there was possibly, you know, some activities going on at the team's hotel. I mean, that seems to be happening, you know, all season long. But some of the details coming out in the police report, you know, that she was she had claimed to be a Russian citizen who was born in Ukraine. Somehow her passport got stolen. Raises a few questions about what's going on. And then now that Nichushkin has been separated from the team and we haven't heard from him, raises further question that we're just not getting answers. So, just a lot of frustration, especially with the local media here, about getting any answers from the Avalanche as far as Where is Nichushkin? Have they talked to him? What is he doing right now? You know, beyond the sports, is he safe? That's, you know, the things that just we want to know.
Yeah, I mean, anytime a Russian passport, Ukrainian-born person gets involved in this day and age, there's multiple questions and multiple layers mm-hmm. that automatically. The most interesting thing about the story, when you read at least the Athletic article that Peter Ball wrote, is they're claiming that the team physician located the woman when checking on Nichushkin due to his health concern. You know, he was injured, or they're checking on his well-being prior to game three. He mm-hmm. found her. He's the one that called 911, but his agent denies this. That to me is the most interesting thing of the report of the agent in a text message to the writer denied that there was a woman involved in this.
Right. And reading through the police report, they do cite that the team physician is the one who found her and actually called 911 because he was afraid that she wasn't in any condition to be, you know, sent home or sent away from the hotel in any sort of rideshare or taxi. So they called EMS, and there was a call for service for this woman who was found in the hotel. Now, the police report is a little vague on exactly where she was found, because they say that the team physician went to check on Nichushkin and found this woman in the room. They don't say they found her in Nichushkin's room or what room they were in when she was found. Reading between the lines, we could probably guess that that's it, but we can't say for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Lonnie, thoughts?
This whole thing stinks. Like, something smells real bad here. This is there is nothing okay about this situation. And anytime it smells of a, you know, cover up as it relates to an athlete, it's, you start getting real. I mean, I think the alarm bells of, you know, every journalist in Denver, as Richard could probably attest, are starting to go off.
Yeah.
This is you don't even, the human side of it, you don't even care about the distraction that it causes for the team.
No,
which is ample. Not. But there is, like, you know, there's a lot of things here that just don't look good for anyone involved.
Yep. And this will unfold and be a sub story. The more the Avalanche win, the more this sub story is going to be part of the playoffs. I have a feeling if the Avalanche lose, not going to go away, but not as big of a story. So this will be definitely interesting, and you know, we'll be following it, seeing how this goes. But speaking of things that are unfolding, it's time to do some picks.
You read my mind.
Did I? Well, you know, I mean, it's always time to talk about some greatness.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not shocked you read my mind. You seem to be predicting the winners of the last few weeks fairly well, seeing as you've gone 4-2, 4-1, and 4-1 yet again in the last 3 weeks, cementing your regular season championship on the first line picks. I just wish I could bring some of my magic from the second line over here, but I, alas, have not been able to do so. Last week, we had Lonnie and Adam both go 4-1. I didn't fare so well at 2-3. I think I started going against them too much, despite my better judgment. But as we stand on the season and into the first week of the postseason, we have Adam at 42-29, Lonnie at 39-32, and I am bringing up the rear, way in the rear, at 33-38. But it's a new week, a new chance. Let's see if I can claw my way back. I have 3 games and then 3 additional wagers we can put on here. First game is going to be Toronto at Tampa Bay, which is going to be played on Saturday, the 29th. Let's start with you, Adam. Who's winning this game?
Toronto's closing it out. We're not getting a game 7.
All right. That brings me to the second part of that is Toronto going to win the series?
I believe they have to if I'm picking them to win the next game.
Exactly.
That's how that works. Okay.
See, But, you know, if I came to somebody like Lonnie here.
You can't hedge your bet like that. No.
If I come to somebody like Lonnie here who says, is Toronto winning tomorrow night or winning tomorrow night?
No. Tampa Bay stretches it to game seven.
And is Toronto going to win the series? The hesitation.
I have such a hard time picking them in a game seven situation. We've seen this before.
You also want to see them suffer. So
I do, like, but I think that, fair, but I do think they win the series.
All right. I'm going Tampa Bay tomorrow as well. And I am saying no, Tampa completes the comeback to win the series. Toronto does not. All right. We're going to have the similar question for the next games. Obviously, if you pick the team ahead to win, the answer for the second question is answered. New Jersey at the New York Rangers. New Jersey leads the series 3-2. Lonnie, who wins game six?
Jersey.
And they finish up the series. All right. Adam.
I'm taking New York and New York. I think the Rangers, I think after last night, I think it wakes them the heck up.
I agree. And also I have my way too early predictions. I have the Rangers going to the Stanley Cup. My predictions the season before were spot on, so I'm going to stay with these. The Rangers win tomorrow night, and they win the series. All right. Game number three going on Saturday. Edmonton at the Kings. Adam, who you got?
You know, this is tough for me because I've been riding the LA bandwagon quite a bit and said that I could see them coming out of the West about at the halfway point. I believe I switched from Calgary to them, as a matter of fact, as I was big on the Pacific getting through. Here's the biggest. I don't think that they can win simply for the fact that Edmonton power play is just, you can't take more than one penalty a game. Like you like one minor and you better stop or you're down 2-0.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think Edmonton is just, I think this could be the year they break through, that they're finally maturing and doing it. And I like Edmonton's chances here on both accounts.
Okay. So you're taking them tomorrow night and to win the series.
I am. Yeah. I think it, you know, and in the off season, LA needs to find goaltending. That's what we're learning. LA is a goalie away from taking that huge step.
All right, Lonnie.
It's not just the power play that's dooming the Kings. It's the fact that they're allowing the most shots per game in the playoffs. Edmonton's getting off 37.2 shots on goal per game.
That's crazy.
It's insane. That's just such a stupid.
Poor Corpusalo. Give him an ice bag.
You have no chance. Edmonton, close it out.
All right. I think that LA can steal one more game, and I think it's going to be tomorrow night. Because it has to be.
Well, it better be.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to steal one more game, but they are going to lose the series. I think Edmonton takes the series as well. All right, there we go for our Bet 99 PHN Picks of the Week. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at PHN Podcast. And if you want to submit your picks and see how well you stack up against us, you can use the hashtag PHN Picks.
But by the way, just to throw another thing out there with what you were saying on the stats, I mean, 160 saves for Corpusalo through five games. And he's lost three of them.
Oof.
I mean, 904 save percentage isn't great, but he's leading the playoffs in saves. You never want your goalie necessarily in the first round to lead your playoffs in saves.
No. Not unless they have like a 930 save percentage.
Yeah, that's essentially what you need. It's essentially what you need. Or you can be Swayman 1-for-1.
Exactly.
So, parting thoughts time. Producer extraordinaire Richard Cote.
You know, I am going to go back to the Nichushkin story and a plea that I make quite often on this podcast, and it is for our listeners to be careful and to be conscious of where they obtain their news and how they share their news. With the not a lot of information coming from the Colorado Avalanche, there has been widespread misinformation and a lot of speculation as to what's going on in the situation. As we are starting to learn more, we know that that may not necessarily be true. So rather than repeat what I've seen out on social media and other outlets, I would just like to urge people to wait until you have complete information, find the credible source, and know that that source is vetting information properly before sharing and posting anything on social media. And that's my rant for the week.
There you go. Lonnie.
So in a social media is good story, I know there's not a lot of those. So while I was traveling and out of the country last week, wrote a story. It was a sort of split work trip. It was definitely working, but also, you know, some sightseeing. And, you know, I wrote a story about meeting a group of kids who went to the Jewish day school I went to in Michigan that I graduated from 34 years earlier, and met the grandson of the truly terrifying Hebrew teacher I had in sixth grade. He's a lovely woman, but old school, scare the crap out of you kind of teaching. Talk trash while she taught me backgammon. It was a truly lovely interaction with her grandson, who is a delightful kid. And the number of people who I heard from on social media, on Facebook, and commenting on the article I wrote about the experience, you know, somebody who I used to work with at my first job out of college, who was a sales assistant, whose kids were on this trip, people whose nieces or nephews are on this trip. It was one of those rare times where it was a social media sort of fulfilling its positive potential rather than its negative. And it was pretty cool to be in the middle of that.
I don't know how to follow that up. That was like well done and stuff. And I'm going to go snarky now.
you wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. I'm going off the board. I'm going football. First round of the NFL draft was last night. You know, as a Bears fan, excited to get Aaron Rodgers out of the division. Was worried because, you know, the best quarterback and a team on the uprise is the Detroit Lions. But less worried after last night, as they did it. They had a very good second round pick with the 12th pick of the draft. So solid second round selection.
It was a great late first round pick in the,
like I said, solid second round pick.
He was never making it the second round. He was never getting there.
Wasn't going off the board at 12 to 18. I'll tell you that.
He should have gone off at 18, but listen, I got good players picked in the wrong spots. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, I really wish I had former Bear and current Lion David Montgomery on speed dial when that happened, and would like a comment from him on that pick.
He's got nothing to worry about. It's the other fast guy on the roster that is no longer going to have a job in Detroit,
I guess. But yeah, no, it's as a Bears fan and getting a guy to protect potentially franchise quarterback when the Lions reach at 12. I mean, hey, I'm less worried about the rise of the Lions. It's good. It's good to be a Bears fan right now. That's where I was going with that.
So next season when the Lions win the division, I'm going to play this back for you.
I mean, like 9 wins, yeah. Probably do it with 9 wins in that division.
I'm saying they don't have to win a lot to win that division, but they
just know, have
they
to could. Win the division.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's because, you know, the love connection isn't going to be ready to take them to the promised land. So we'll see. It's changing the guard of the NFC North in many, many ways, but that's mine. Thank you to my custom sports chair and Foco and LDE Jewelry and Manscaped and the Chicago Wool Stores for making this possible. Check out all our friends. For Richard Cote and Lonnie Goldsmith, this is Adam Minnick. Enjoy the playoffs, folks. It's a lot of fun in the NHL and the AHL playoff runs. So long, everybody.